This is a Niche Radio podcast. For more, visit www.nicheradio.co.za.
Welcome to the Come Join Us channel. We're here this morning at the lovely De Wetshof in the Robertson Wine Valley. I'm speaking to Johan De Wet, which is head of marketing, owner, CEO. You know it, everything, the whole list. And we're chatting about Chardonnay this morning. So Johan, welcome. Our glasses are empty, so I'm going to give us some of your lovely wines. So those of you know, I've seen quite a few of the Wetshof, especially the Limestone Hill, which you can find in most stores. We are enjoying that this morning. Delish. Okay. So Johan,
cheers.
What's news? Cheers. Thank you for that lovely tasting. We had a fantastic tasting earlier, and we were in the cellars, and we had a chat about all the different Chardonnays of the valley. I mean, how many Chardonnays do you actually farm with?
So we have six Chardonnays.
Yeah.
So 200 hectares of vineyard, six different Chardonnays, and 75% of what we do is Chardonnay.
Okay, you see. Yeah. What's the rest?
Flower decoration. No, we do a bit of Sauvignon Blanc, Riesling, Pinot Noir, Cabernet, Merlot.
Yeah. Okay, delicious.
Yeah.
What's your favorite?
Chardonnay.
obviously. We were chatting about Riesling earlier, and you said it's quite a wine that people don't know, I think, as much or very well.
In South Africa, I think, yeah. You know, it's struggling as a category in South Africa, but it's a great product and it's a great varietal, and I wish people would drink more Riesling and have a bigger appreciation for Riesling.
Originally from Germany?
Germany, yeah.
Okay, fantastic. And then your father studied there originally?
Yeah, so my dad studied there, my brother as well. So the cuttings or the clonal material we have is actually a selection that my dad did in Germany.
Fantastic.
And brought back home.
So tell us a bit about how did Chardonnay start with you guys in South Africa?
Long story, huh? My dad smuggled it in because of legislation problems back in the late 70s. And it just kind of grew from there. And Chardonnay did exceptionally well in Robertson with our high limestone soils, our climate, all that. So it really just boomed in this area. And if you look at Robertson today, it's 27% of all Chardonnay in South Africa still planted in Robertson.
Fantastic.
So which means it's the biggest Chardonnay producing area of South Africa.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Hey, I read something one day about we being the longest, and I'm saying we because I know I come from Robertson. So Robertson being one of the longest wine routes in the world, is that true? Longer than Napa Valley? Am I wrong or am I right?
I don't know, Bordeaux's pretty long.
Is it?
And Burgundy's pretty long.
But we're not too short. I mean, how many wine farms are here on this road?
About 50.
That's a lot.
And Robertson, I think, is 21 kilometers long.
Yes.
As an area. But I can't say if it's one.
So most probably the most in a short space, most probably, hopefully.
I don't know. But I'm not going to go and do that debate.
Yeah. But besides Chardonnay, What else is Robertson in this valley actually equipped makes it a wine?
Okay, bubbly, you know, I mean, MCC, which is again a Chardonnay base, but bubbly, Robertson is the biggest bubbly producing area of South Africa as well. So I think it kind of, because Chardonnay does well, because we have the high limestone soils, low pH wines, which is good for bubbly production, makes wines that age. So again, good for bubbly. Mm. So bubbly is just doing exceptionally well out of this area.
Do a lot of people buy from Robertson as well?
You mean like
other brands and areas?
Yeah.
Is it?
Okay. There's very few other areas that don't buy from Robertson.
Yeah, and specifically Chardonnay, like you said.
Chardonnay, because they're chasing the pHs, the low pH wines from the area.
And we have specifically Robertson's got a low pH, like you said.
Exactly.
And that automatically gives more a fruitier type of style, wine.
It brings citrus out characters, that chalky minerality that's, you know, typical from, you know, the champagnes as well. So it's all these characters that just work very well with a bubbly and a Chardonnay, for example.
Okay, fantastic. I know that you do produce also a bubbly as well, a Brut and a Rosé.
Yeah, we're culling them and we're now going to make only a Blanc de Blanc because it fits in with our story.
Of course,
the whole being a Chardonnay house, having all these different Chardonnays, the Blanc de Blanc is obvious. Next one.
Those of you that don't know Blanc de Blanc, Blanc de Blanc is 100% Chardonnay. It's not a mixture of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. Okay, how many Chardonnays you said you've got?
Six.
Okay, your favorite child?
Is it a party? Is it dinner? Is it lunch?
Okay, let's break it down, okay? Lunch?
For just easy drinking, enjoying a glass of wine, I think Limestone Hill is the go-to.
I love it. I go into a shop and I wonder sometimes what to buy. I buy your wine. If I see your bottle of wine, I buy it. Not just because I know you guys and I come from Robertson, but you know what you get. That's the whole thing, and I think that's with your brand.
It's a very true and honest wine.
Yes.
And which makes it, you know, very easy to sell, for example.
Absolutely.
Then, I mean, Bon Vallon, unoaked as well, but, you know, more tight, more restrained, more linear in a way, and a bit more complicated.
Yes.
So much more sommelier wine. So,
yes.
But in my book, that's one of the fingerprints of our area. You know, it's a fingerprint wine of the Vesa.
The Bon Vallon specifically.
Yeah.
Okay. But Finesa, I actually found in Joburg. I went to Saint, we went last week. So Saint, beautiful, lovely restaurant. And we saw your wines, and we had it, my husband and myself, and absolutely loved it because it was food, amazing pairing wine.
Yeah, Finesse is, we always say it's our blue eye boy, you know? People who don't like unoaked will like it, people who don't like oaked will like it, people who don't like Chardonnay will like it. It's kind of that one wine
that
which pulls everything together.
Okay, fantastic. And then your flagship or your known one is Batelier.
Yeah, which is our...
Tell us a bit of history around the Batelier. How does it work and the name and everything?
Yeah, so the Batelier vineyard is the clonal material that my dad smuggled in back in the day. We planted the Batelier vineyard from, and it's pretty much been our flagship ever since. Mm. It's been a single vineyard or bottled as a single vineyard since, I think, 1990. And, 1990. And so this has been, it's been an awesome vineyard, and you know.
How do you make it?
Well, bring it in.
How long is it in the barrel? So
about 12 months in new barrels.
That's quite a long time.
Yeah, but the wine can take it. The wine's got complexity. It's got structure to carry the new wood.
What gives your wine complexity? What makes that block special?
Oh, that vineyard, the site is awesome. You know, you're sitting with high limestone, high clay concentration. The material is brilliant material. It's one of the material, clonal selections that, or clonal clone that does the best in Robertson. It's just been phenomenal.
And
vineyard.
You've always had it. How many years now?
Planted in 1986.
Jeez, it's the same age as us. You 82?
Two.
I'm 85, so I'm not saying my ages, you work it out. So, you grew up in Robertson?
Yeah, grew up on the farm.
Obviously, we went to school, we were on the bus.
Yeah, we grew up here, and my dad always says, you know, wine is like religion, you're born into it. And we could have done other things. I trained horses for a while, and so, but wine.
That was also one of your loves, eh?
Yeah, it still is. But wine is what we do. You know, I mean, it's.
You still do the horses part time?
Not as much as I would like.
You used to ride mostly. Tell us about it. What did you used to do with it?
I used to show, and I did a bit of endurance and a bit of everything. You know, it's all disciplines in the horse arena intrigues me.
You see that it sort of resembles wine with how it works?
Discipline. You need a bit of discipline. and a bit of practice. Now we practice more with wine than with horses.
That's good. Yeah. Okay. And you've got a lovely wife. You've got two kids.
Two kids, a wife.
Boy, girl.
A boy and a girl.
Okay, fantastic.
Parents are still around. So.
Okay, and how much are they still involved with business?
My mom's totally out, but my dad still comes to the office.
Okay.
And,
so you and your brother, you've taken over the whole
business. Yeah, but it's nice to have the previous generation because they've got the history.
Of course.
You can always go back and say what happened in 1973, you know, and okay, so this vintage looks like that, you know, and how did you manage it? And so it's great to have that, the depth of knowledge in the vineyards and in the winemaking.
Has it changed a lot to their generation and your generation now into the business?
I think the new generation has put its fingerprint on the, what we're doing, but I think we're still staying very true to the fingerprint of the estate and the fingerprint of the area. So I think we're not moving away from what we are, what we were. It's just, you know, refining what you have and trying to make it better.
Okay, that's amazing. Yeah, we were talking about it earlier. I asked him about trends and how wine has differed from the 80s, 90s, and so forth as well, and up to now. And how do you go and plan yourself or look at it and holistically as to, okay, this is what we've got this year. How do we adapt our styles? How do we go forward? What do you do?
We look at trends and we look at it, you know, in depth, and but we don't let us, we don't get pushed by trends. So we will experiment and we will do what we have to do or and adapt to trends, but within context.
Yes.
So we, I will not, I made the example earlier, when if Viognier is popular, I'm definitely not going to rip up all my Chardonnay and plant Viognier.
But so you adapt your brand according to what you do well. And
exactly. So you adapt it to what you do, but you stay with you stay within a very tight parameter.
Okay. All right, interesting. So you travel quite a lot. Where do you like to travel to? And where do you find most inspiration to what you do?
I think America is a nice place to visit always. You know, it's a nice market. They're very knowledgeable on wine. And no, I think it's one of the most interesting places to visit.
Favorite era?
Oh,
well. Napa Valley.
but then, you know, that's one part of it. Then you go back to Europe and you're in the old world and the history of vineyards in, say, Burgundy, for example. And, you know, there's nowhere else in the world where you can have that, and it, which is so much more special than, say, a new world, you know. And so you've got a bit of both. You know, the one is modern, inspirational. The other one is old history. Structure, and I think they're both important.
And do you take inspiration off that?
Yeah, of course. You can't you can't go to Burgundy and not be inspired by their wines.
Totally.
It just doesn't happen. And the same with America, you know, or any every wine country on earth has something that's inspirational, even if it's nothing to do with you. Say Malbec from Argentina, for example. Damn Malbec, it's nothing to do with what we do, but it's the way they plant the elevations and the way the wines differ through elevation. It is hell of interesting.
And it's quite cool maybe to go to countries where we can relate to this new world, and we look at Australia and we look at Argentina, like you said, and where you have different varieties. I remember when I was overseas and I did my sommelier scholarship, we were looking at, we did one tasting one evening and we just had Alma Viva. I don't know if you're familiar with
from
it.
From Chile, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I was absolutely broken that evening because I was so homesick. Because I could taste the wine is not completely South Africa, but it's in line with it. And it was optimum temperature.
Alma Viva is Chile's flagship.
Yeah, it was exceptional wine. But the funny thing is they gave me a bottle of wine after I finished my WACTs and I came back and he said to me, I can have any bottle of wine. I remember that bottle of wine. I took it home. I flew with it. I got here. It was not the same bottle of wine. Completely different wine. Wasn't the storage, the whole journey of it. And that's why they always say the wine is alive. I mean, have you had some of those?
And it's not only that. It's also your experience in a certain area, you know. And what makes the best wine of wine you've ever had? It's not the best wine. It's probably not the most expensive wine either. It's the experience you had when you had that bottle.
Totally.
So it was with an engagement, for example, or whatever, you know. And it's that
and the emotional connection.
It's that emotional connection to wine that made that wine very, very special. And then you go back to home, you know, you or maybe it's a different example. You go to a farm, it's beautiful, you're in the vineyards. Wow, and you taste this wine and it's just unbelievable. You go back home, you're back in your environment and the wine just doesn't taste the same, you know. And it's so it's you because you don't have that emotional connection at that moment.
So that's what they always say, when is the correct time to open a bottle of wine? It's when it's always there. It's when and how you spend it with.
I always think that you can never have an exact moment. You can't plan it. You can't say the perfect time to open this very special bottle of wine is in 2021 when I turn whatever, or when this happens. The best moment is that moment when you say, now, this is the moment. You sit there with your friends or in a dinner or wherever you are and you say, everything leads up to that moment. You're like, this is the right moment. Mm. And you take that wine. And
but you do like wine with age.
Yeah. But that's a different topic.
White and red. Both of them. And we were chatting about it earlier because I asked him about wines, specifically white wines, that's maybe not oaked. And then he said, no, it can actually age. So tell us, if I have a bottle of unoaked wine and I want to keep it, what tips would you give me to keep it? And at least how long? How do I look at it?
Any wine which is of a certain quality is ageable. You must just make sure you've got a good cellar.
Good
dark cellar, cold temperature, you know, not too cold. You don't want to go, say, under 4 or so, then your wine will freeze. Mm. That's different. But anything between 9 to, you know, 12, something in that line, that'll be your ideal, perfect cellar.
Okay, all right. And you have wines dating back to when?
1821.
Serious? What? Really?
Yeah.
You literally have in stock yet?
Yeah.
Where? Tell me about them.
Well, that's a secret, right?
No, otherwise you're going to be Cheryl.
This is not that moment when you open this wine.
Well, we're not tasting it, so. What's the oldest wine you've ever drank?
1821.
Where?
Yeah, twice actually.
You have it here?
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us.
It's a Vin de Constance that my dad bought on an auction in London. And so we had one bottle about 7 or 8 years ago, and then last year we recorked, so I tested again.
Oh gosh, we had the oldest bottle of wine back in the day when I was also in England. They actually made it still after Thomas Jefferson, small bottle like this. It was the most expensive bottle that ever sold, and they had two. It was Lafitte. So the one was sold, they gave to Waterston, and we had it in a little box there, and actually had it framed. And then the Thomas Jefferson Museum bought the other one and they sold it for millions of pounds.
No, I can imagine.
And then what happened, what did they go and do? They went to put it in a box where there was a light on it. So what happens with the cork?
Pushed out.
Exactly. So they always made the joke, and it's funny, they have a very expensive empty bottle of wine which they didn't pay anything for, and Thomas Jefferson also, which they paid a lot of money for. So they couldn't do anything with that wine. And apparently that wine was still legit. They opened it up. When they opened up the Lafitte, it wasn't oxidized.
Wines do age, and people always underestimate the way wines can age.
Yeah. No, it's true.
I've often had people who come in, they have a 2013 or 2006 or something like that, and they're like, no, this wine isn't right anymore. And the wines are beautiful. It's just, you know.
No, but like you said, again, it's how you store it. I think a lot is what
it
is.
Open it or something, you know. But anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so tell us, what's your experience in the South African wine industry? What do you think, where are South African wines going into the world?
South Africa is in a bit of it's a good and a bad place. You know, you're sitting, I think there's a lot of exciting winemakers, exciting wines. The quality is awesome coming from the country. It's just, we're not necessarily always getting the prices that we deserve for our wines.
Okay, why do you think so?
Because there's a stigma around it. People aren't prepared to pay, because there's a lot of bulk wine going out there. And so people aren't prepared to pay more than a certain amount for, in London or in New York or wherever, for South African wine. But they're prepared to pay more for
a Burgundy
or a Chilean or a French wine or an American wine. And that's all to do with image. So South Africa's big task is to lift the image of our premium wines.
I do agree with you on
and,
that.
And try
perception.
Try to lift the perception of our premium sector, which has nothing to do with our entry level.
So what are you doing towards it?
We do what we can. Try to sell more, try to be in the restaurants, try to be in the top bottle stores of the world, Harrods, hedonism and so on. And, you know, really just try to get the movement.
Do you do quite a few wine shows and so forth as well?
I travel about 150 days a year.
Jeez, that's a lot.
Abroad.
It's half your year.
Abroad.
Respect, Gero. That's his wife, by the way.
Yeah, so, you know, we do what we can. Mm. But it takes time. All these things take time.
It's good. But at least, I know it's amazing that you're at least out there and you're doing it. I think, but like you said, most of the wines leave our country. That's massively bulk and the perception around it. It's sad, but I mean, that's why we're having a chat here, that people can know outside that there's more to South African wine than just bulk wine. It's premium as well. I mean, we live in areas like, for example, Robertson, where people also perceive Robertson wines as bulk.
Yeah, people, it's
and
got
cheaper.
It's got a much worse image, you know, to put it that way, than, say, Human Order.
Yes.
Because Human Order's got no cooperatives. It doesn't have any bulk production, where Robertson, a big portion of Robertson is a bulk production. Mm. So which drops your image again, you know? So you're prepared to pay less for wine from, say, this area than from your Leonardo, to use an example.
Mm.
And which is wrong, you know, because you do have estates from Robertson that are very premium and that are making awesome wines.
Yeah, okay. Tell us, you normally do tastings and dinners and so forth as well with your business, or can people, where do people experience Davidsoff in South Africa and overseas? Where can they go?
We do wine dinners, the farm's open 6 days a week. But yeah, I mean, most of the shops and places will have one of our wines on the list, or, you know.
You have specific distributors you work with?
Yeah, so we've got a local distributor, Meridian, who does South Africa, and then we sell to about 27 countries around the world.
Okay, who's your biggest country you sell to?
Holland, Belgium, between
really?
Those two, then
okay.
Germany, America, Japan, so yeah.
Export, how many? About
70%.
That's a lot.
Mm.
And 30% local.
Yeah.
Okay. You targeting Africa at all?
Yeah, we try. Namibia is a good market. Tanzania is a good market. We're trying a bit in Kenya. We've got a new import in Kenya now. So,
okay.
Yeah, we do what we can.
What can you see is happening to the African market? Because that's next up in the level. Because we always concentrate Europe, Europe, Europe. But don't you think Africa's evolving?
Europe is a wine-drinking nation, where Africa is not necessarily a wine-drinking nation. So it is much more difficult to break the African market.
Mm.
But it's potentially a good market. If you look at Nigeria, is one of the biggest champagne drinking countries
massive.
In the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just going to take time. But I think Europe's a much easier market. America the same.
Don't you feel everyone's like targeting Europe, 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 Europe?
No, it's a big market.
Is it?
Yeah.
And they are still massively on wine, beverages. I'm looking at alcohol now on the spectrum. You think wine is still a big thing for them? Or
yeah.
Is it?
All forms of alcohol. Beer's big, wine's big, you know. It comes from there, you know.
Yeah.
So, no, it's a good market.
You were mentioning America. So, you go there, and I mean, what makes our style a little bit different, like, for example, California and Napa Valley type of style? Is there a difference
America
between the type of
America has a very rich, almost sweet style of Chardonnay, for example.
Yes.
But there's many, 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 many examples that are not like that. So that's a very broad generalization. And our wines are more tight, more elegant, more mineral driven, which I think, you know, does well with the American consumer too. But it doesn't have the acidities that you sometimes have in Europe.
Mm.
But again, that's a generalization. So I'm trying to not tread on
toes. No,
I
see.
but it's you know, how do you put it? South Africa does have, South Africa's got an old world style in a new world country, which makes it very appealing.
Mm. Okay. So if you won't drink Chardonnay, what else would you drink?
Any form of liquor.
Okay, besides wine. If you would enjoy something else besides wine, what would you drink?
I drink cognac or brandy,
okay.
I drink whiskey, gin. Yeah, wine is 99% of what I consume. Mm. A bit of beer, but I don't drink much beer. But yeah, not anything.
Awesome. Thank you very much for the chat, Johan.
My pleasure.
A fantastic time. It was sweet and short, but we're going to go enjoy some more wine. So thank you for those of you that's joining us and also checking us out. Till next time.
Bye.
Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or log into www.nicheradio.co.za.